So that's, and unfortunately, we can't do much better than that. What I've done for a number of people is left enough ceiling space inside in conjunction with the architect so that we could put a car lift in, which buys you another foot and a half, 2 feet.
We can go through one by one. We concur with Roger's report. So I think Mr. Schaefer, Mr. Barker testified that no matter what we do here, it's better than what's existing. But it's even more than that because it creates better flood insurance for the homeowner, better flood for the CRS community rating system for the city. We would rest subject to asking additional questions from the board if you'd like to.
I would just say, I don't think, from my perspective, you need to go over every single variance because they are existing.
I can put it on this one. It really goes down every point by point. So, again, we would adopt that. We concur.
Okay.
So, I have a question, just to be clear, that the bulk of this building is less than what's existing, and the air and space of the nearby homes, but is it also is going to impede anybody's views left and right?
It's improved. So, left and right, not
from the day side, obviously. That's the real
right.
That's the actual front of the house.
From left and right, there's not much change. I'm a guy that puts his cards on the table. There's not much change. Front to back, though, there is more view corridor created significantly. If you can see, it's probably 3 or 4 feet more in the back, even with the decks, than it currently exists. So the design that the architect developed is really just gave credit to the neighborhood and the benefits that other people moved there for. So people on either side of this property are going to have a better view once this house is built and the old one is removed.
So I assume that I want to hear.
We think this will be the new model along Edgewater. open in the back. It's really what the city wants. It's open in the back. The front is, the front's the front, but the benefit everyone will have along the water there is a lot more open space and just a safer, flood-proof house.
And you're also minimizing the area below design flood.
Yes.
Mainly because you don't have the space to do it, but it's a very small area.
It is. That is such as most of the houses along Edgewood and Winchester. So.
And if that was in a coastal A zone or a V zone, you would be regulated to that requirement of 300 square feet of enclosed area, right?
Right.
Okay. If you're complete, are you complete?
We are, Mr. Chairman.
Well, then I'd like to open up to the public if you could. If board members, you have any other further questions, I give you priority first. Well, let's open it to the public and see what they have to say. Is there anyone in the public who wishes to make a comment? Please, bring it up the chair here. Obviously, there's no one in the public here, so there's no one to make comment, and Mr. Taco is not going to make comment, so no, he's not going to. And so the public portion is now closed with no comment. Do you have any further you wish to add or reply to the public?
No, I think, Mr. Chairman, this is the best we can do. I think this is, but not saying that as a, this is the best we can do. It's a great application, but it's the best we can do. We can't make the variances go away. We can't get more land. We can't do anything more than what the professionals have designed. So we're going to rest as it is.
Okay, last opportunity. Any questions from the board? If not,
go ahead. Just a curiosity, what materials are you using for the pilings in the water?
We haven't designed that yet.
Is there anything you would
probably
ask?
Probably going to be me, and we would use conventionally CCA-treated piling. I don't know whether we'll have to do the inert piling.
Wrapping or not.
The wrapped. Even on the same street, we've come across jobs where we have to use it, and then DEP sells it another one, we don't, even though they're only three houses away. So again,
the shellfish habitat usually drives that.
It does. So an environmentalist that you and I both know will be drawn in to make sure we get that right.
Nice. Okay. Anything further, Roger?
Yeah.
Are you good? Okay.
The only couple quick questions I had, just heard a couple comments that to the extent you do any plantings, you can do those in like the raised beds, is that?
And those raised beds must be masonry. No railroad ties or anything else in flood, anything
No floatables.
Yeah, that's good.
No, all masonry.
We can add the other one, too. Of course.
Yeah, all that, yeah. Because railroad ties float, get away, and they float away.
All your landscaping goes floating away.
It's all just a mess in the street.
And then do we need to say anything about this?
How high are you looking for?
2 feet.
2 feet.
Anything about this bulkhead opening below elevation 8? I mean, I know you commented on in your report. Is that something?
As a condition of approval, Ed would have to sign off on it. Ed and I would have to sign off on this.
So that's
they have to provide a detail.
And we agree with that.
Okay. And then, last question. I know Andy talked about it, but as far as raising that garage elevation, is it?
I think they're going to try to get to 5.
They'll try and get to 5.
As Andy indicated, they are regulated by the height of the sidewalk and the curb. They can't build a ski slope, but as much as practical, I think they can achieve.
If you go past 5, we'll go past 5.
Right. Okay.
You still want the car to back out, and then the car is hitting the back side of the street.
No, that's how I understood the testimony. Okay, so with those noted, to C variance application, I'll run through them real quick. We'll need a motion in a second after I summarize them. The lot area, 2,000 square feet of uplands required. They're at, it's from the bulkhead, but they're at about 9, it's going to be about 912.5. square feet, and compliance plans will show that exact dimension, I assume. Lot width, 32 feet required, 25 feet proposed. Front yard setback to the building, 12 feet required, 11.5 feet proposed. Side yard setback to the building and to the deck on the left side, 4 feet required, they're at 3 feet. And the side yard setbacks on the right side to the building and the deck, 4 feet required, and they're at 3 feet. The rear yard setback to the building, it goes over the water, but 12 feet required, and 0 feet is the variance. Rear yard decks, same thing, 6 feet required, 0 is proposed, and then the rear deck heights, they're not permitted higher than the first floor, which over the water, they're proposing a second floor deck. For obvious reasons. Then the parking, they are providing for 1 space, 2 are required. Lot coverage, they're at 94.7%, where 75% is permitted. And then the total landscaping, they're at 5.3%, where 25% is required. There'll be a landscaping waiver. The conditions, we discussed a few, but then anything else in Mr. McCarron's report, subject to any outside approvals, whatever they need through CAFRA, and then any other representations made by the applicant during the course of the hearing and our typical standard conditions.
Okay.
And the raised planting beds, we talked about those, so I'll incorporate all those into the resolution.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, please.
I'll make the motion.
Have a second? And we'll have a roll call vote. State your reasons, please.
Commissioner Kriebel.
This is a very unique lot, and you have to breathe the air of the proportion of upland area that's available for this type of construction. It triggers all these variances first, and then realize that there are so many things stacked against the application that these variances are kind of triggered just to make a proper home. I personally think that this is one of the most unique intercoastal neighborhoods that we have. I think it's worth us encouraging this type of building because it lends to the character of our town. These are the types of things that people see and take ownership when they come to Ventnor. They see that we're a seaside community that has these kinds of unique homes. So all the gymnastics that it takes to build a viable building like this, I think, are part of what you need to do to be in that area. I think that the things that are triggered are de minimis in my mind. I think the spiral staircase is another unique feature, and I like the massing that it takes the light and air, gives some of it back to the neighbors, to somebody that spends some time on the bay. That is really the front of the house to people that live in that neighborhood. And I think you did a nice job, so I support that.
Jay Cook.
I'm going to vote in favor of the application. First of all, it's truly waterfront living. The next thing is it features what's an accent to this community. and this community is one of the few communities in this country that's bifurcated by a waterway. And our waterway is another main highway. It's the ICW. And the properties along there show a lot of people who travel it what the city is about. So the more we showcase and improve these properties, the better our community looks. That's the first thing, and that goes into our, the image of our community. The next thing is, of course, is that they could have lived at this house and not even been here at all, or had with almost no variances whatsoever. And it's replacing an obsolete house. And one of the things we need to be doing in our community is replacing, replenishing our housing stocks and keeping them up to date. It's doing that. The other thing it does is it actually improves our waterway. They've pulled back. They've given some ideas. They're showing what other people can do now to make our waterway, which is the backyard. It's a playground is what it is. And it's the resort character of our community. This is all what featuring these accents that go on. Now, when you get into that, you have FEMA compliance set now. It's now leans to our CSR rating. It goes up from there. It's upgrading our bulkheads, which are upgrading our storm rating as well. And they're dealing with a gate in there, which is kind of unusual, but we have to deal with it as well. So with that, now you have the classic of all time, narrowness, shallowness, and a regular shape of the lot. If this one doesn't have it and do it, there's something wrong with the ordinance because it's a classic example of it. And that's it. So with that, now they've also increased one parking spot. They have their short one, but they've increased one that they didn't have before. That helps the neighborhood tremendously. They're working with the landscaping and so on with it. And they have enclosed parking. So all of these things go to a property that is an example of what can be done on a given small lot on these waterfront lots. And we have them, and let's embellish them, and let's make them look good. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
Roman Zabby Hutch.
I also vote in favor of the application. This is a hardship property, so all the variances to me are justified because of the conditions that persist there. Overall, putting up a new structure, eliminating, providing new flood compliance, a new bulkhead, are very good positive steps for the city. It'll be an improvement, an aesthetic improvement. So I'm all for it.
Thanks.
Lorraine Salata.
I appreciate the amount of work and creativity that went into designing that, because it really does lessen some of the impact, even with all the variances. I think it's a really good design. I always, it troubles me that there isn't more parking, but I realize that that's an impossibility, and you did create one space, so that's a plus. But I commend you for putting that together. I think it's a really good project. You didn't really have a lot to work with, so I approve it.
There's boat parking. That's good.
Dan Smith III.
I'm also going to vote in favor of the application. When you think about raising the existing home there, that would have been a disservice to the community, I think. There's a square peg round hole, kind of, just to comply with the elevation. And I think this design could be like a new model for those tough lots. And the design would allow, the individual lot to take advantage of the design and tweak it as needed. So it's a great model for the small lots that are on the water. And I really like the way it opens up. And it's a great job. And I think there's no negative impact. The variances are what they are. You've lessened everything that you could. And it's, truly a hardship lot. You've done a magnificent job.
Mike Weaven.
I agree with all the comments from the fellow board members.
when you can trade old for new and get a plus out of it, it's a no-brainer. I'm in favor.
Tim Coop.
I also vote in favor. It's a very challenging lot, and you put in what is a very nice house, which is going to be a generous house, but have added parking and improved the views and openness. So I think that's a win for everybody.
All right.
Well, that, it appears
Thank
that
you.
You've actually been approved.
Well,
I don't know how that happened, but you have. Gentlemen, a very good presentation, and
thank
I'd like
you.
To thank you for a good plan.
And just want to point out, this was one that I came in late, and Roger's report was a lot of variances, but super thorough, so that was good, too.
So, but,
cool.
Good.
We're done. All right.
Could you convey to the owners, have them welcome, convey this to the owners, that we welcome them to the community. With that, members of the board, do you have anything to bring before the board this evening?
A stamp for anybody else.
Any business before the board?
Just take that.
You can make as many comments as you want, Commissioner.
I just want to share something that I've been working on with the business association. This is a, what I created was an idea for a downtown improvement initiative. And I pulled some of the business owners and I created an online work group. It's called a Basecamp, where we can all get online and share documents and ideas and comments and to-do lists, and actually it's like an online chat. So we have 15 people on there, business owners, an architect, some people from the green team, and we came up with, like it's online as well, you can see it, we came up with, because we didn't as a commission want to start earmarking money or start policy in a bubble. We wanted to find out what the business owners really wanted to do. So through that, we came up with some short-term and some long-term projects. One of them is we've already started improving Carmel might be able to attest. I think we kind of started sweeping with code enforcement and certain business districts to make them more aware of the things that they should be doing, like sidewalks and painting. And I think you're already starting to see it with signage. There are a couple businesses that are already starting to affect that. The idea here is that our businesses are our driver in this town. If you have a vibrant downtown, then you have people paying the bills. And we already have that. It's good, but it could be great. And I think there's other things that the planning board can do that are business-friendly zoning, things like finding maybe there's things that could be studied that are just strictly business-friendly, things like helping smaller businesses, and long-term, helping smaller businesses diverse, keeping the business community diverse, things that can help these small businesses thrive. You talked about facades. Maybe the city could have a 0% loan for awning for facades. But I think that we need to start thinking outside of the box as a zoning and planning board also. Are we really truly business friendly? Are we being creative enough to help that small business thrive and open? So we're trying to earmark money. Money is always the hardest part, but I feel like we've gained this dialogue with the business owners. They know that now. I think that what they're responsible for a little bit more, and we're also going to start doing simple things like trees and trash cans, new trees and trash cans. We're looking for grants, and it's all long game stuff. It's not going to happen overnight, but encouraging these kinds of things with the business owner and it creates a location for the city, and that creates investment in the homes behind it. So personally, I think that we can do things that are unique, like creating a few parking spaces in the downtown area for a place where you can sit and enjoy a takeout, ice cream, or a cup of coffee in a parking location. They do it all over the country. They've been doing it for years. These little mini parklets that they sit in a parking lot, in a parking space. And people will claim that they're giving them a parking space, but you're actually really, a car might bring two or three people, a parklet might bring six or eight people to sit in that neighborhood and drink a cup of coffee. It's proven. They bring more people.
You don't think our store owners would scream and holler?
They will. They will. But other cities do it. And they did it. Stockholm, Sweden stopped all the traffic in the downtown area, and all the business owners hated it until they started making money. And they realized that our little downtowns are the malls that left are already here. We have the ability to have this diverse little grouping of old and new businesses, have storefronts on the bottom. And if we can, we're also looking at the signage. We can work at the signage, so if we can, like Collingswood, I heard you mention you live in Collingswood. Collingswood figured it out. They have. That's why a diverse zoning to keep chains out of our little downtowns, I think, is something that we should really consider, because those small restaurants are drivers for vibrant downtowns. It's really about the restaurants to keep those chains out. But I don't think we have that problem, but it's good to look forward and not have that problem. Because vendors growing, vendors is getting attention. We're not a secret anymore. But I think we have to stay ahead of it. And the signage, just the downtown with awnings and similar signage that people notice, and when they're in it and better lit streets, that people will find parking. That no matter what town, if they're in Haddonfield, they'll park in residential streets, and that's just the way. It's just the way parking. We're not going to get any more parking places. Like we'd like to get more of a sense of place in the city. So that's always been one of my goals, but I feel like it's time to really start to step it up.
So as a board, what can we do other than enforce signing regulations? Because there are like some really awful looking storefronts with signage. Five signs, and say, you know, it's just like cluttered and ugly looking things like
Roger,
that.
I think we need to redo our signage, old sign ordinance.
You know, sales on the back of a pie plate, put it on the back of a window and expect people to go there. I think that's an education thing. That really falls on code enforcement. I think what the zoning board can do is do things like maybe come up with some design standards.
Like glass area.
I think we need to do a new signage ordinance and a new lighting ordinance for the buildings themselves.
Personally, I hate those flashing light LEDs around all the windows. Drive through Atlantic City.
They're a nuisance.
Looks like a pawn shop.
Sometimes people link them, thinking that that's going to bring people into your business.
No.
But it doesn't. And that's an education thing, too. If you look at Water Dog versus with Florida Polka, before Water Dog opened, there were people waiting to get in because they were so good at online marketing and they had no windows. Right. They just had one sign that says Water Dog. And Florida Polka, God bless him, he didn't have any social media, and people were lining out the door to get in when they opened up, and they had to sell. That was part of probably the reason they had to sell, is that they didn't have that kind of vibe.
That's going to be changed.
That's going to change. That's going to be new.
I think as our discussion went earlier, I think, you know, there's a lot of these store owners and building owners that aren't willing to put the money into the facades.
Right.
And I think if there were funds available, low interest loans, grants, I mean, it's expensive.
But I understand that, but I don't have too much sympathy for that, because you decided to start a business, and I've done that. I've built out businesses that they give you. I had to change the air conditioner in the place I rented for $200,000 one year. You know, that's part of you've done it. It's part of the job. But at the same time, we can help.
Yeah.
And I think there's some things that we can do. I think the signage ordinance could be changed, it could get better. So I started a matrix of Ventnor versus Collingswood, Haddonfield, and Martin. And there's no real path of what exactly the ordinances are, but there are definitely more descriptors in Collingswood and Haddonfield that say that there are things in the signage and the facades of buildings that reflect the style of historic nature of the town, things of that nature. I think we could, I don't think that we necessarily have to land on the historic side, but maybe we need to figure out what that image is in our downtowns and try to elaborate into the code.
The Northeast Redevelopment Zone, in that actual, it addresses signs that differentiate. You can almost read into that and apply that throughout the business zone also.
There's probably a lot of good work in that.
Yes.
It's written that could be translated into that ordinance, but then, and you don't have to look back, if you can look forward to the new places that are starting to build, that these are the ordinances that we'd like to keep.
Yeah, I think, looking at it, as I'll look at it as a shopper, it's like, I'm not going to go into a store that doesn't have like a fresh, clean, kind of a positive curb appeal. And that's what's wrong with so many of the stores. Their curb appeal is horrible.
Right.
Like any real estate.
That's right.
A house, they tell you need curb appeal. And you see a store that looks dirty out front with, posters, stickers, signs in every direction. Why do you want to go in there? It looks like a junk shop.
You're not buying into that that vibe.
And we have a more sophisticated, at least summer residents here, and they're looking for those kind of shops that are a little more upscale looking.
My own experience. My wife will go to New York City, and then she finds all the restaurants and all the custom cookie shops. And there's lines there already when we get there.
Yes, yes.
These are places that survive on their social media presence and their word of mouth. And not on the number of signs that are jammed together on a storefront. And that's an education thing. I think they're even in Haddonfield, there are some older ones that didn't really sign on. But for the majority of them, when they started to be more strict about their codes, they got a lot more. I think the whole town benefited. Because they raise the bar, just like we're raising the bar in the neighborhoods in our thing. But the payoff is going to be when people start building because they want to be around that. They want to be in Lewis, Delaware, because you want to go downtown Lewis, Delaware.
Right.
You look for places.
Yeah. I know, when I have my stores here. What I found, and I don't think it has changed terribly, the local people didn't shop locally. Everybody flocked offshore. So much so that I finally moved my business office, because that's where all the Ventnor, Moorgate, Longport people were. So there has to be a movement.
With my business as well. We didn't know where people went offshore to shop.
Everybody went offshore. So, the whole shop local thing is really important.
And
local, meaning your own hometown.
Yeah. And it's more traction. And where else can you have a triple in the amount of customers that come in the summer? I think Mike's a great example. Your shop looks great. It always has looked great. But
it's going to look better, though. In about a month, it'll look better.
So that little downtown, it really could, it could be more. And I think those shops are starting to look better and better. But if there's a way for this group to come together and brainstorm, maybe one or two people to say, these are best practices, how can we apply them, what are we doing now, what are we missing out on, and it could only take a year or two, and start to see something.
I want to make a suggestion, is that the planning board appoint a subcommittee to work with you. And the typical things that we need to look at right there is, rather than an architectural standard, a design standard. You look at that sushi shop mega that built there. Look at the facade of that store. It does not fit in that entire. It's a blight. It's a blight to what it is. It should never have been built there.
Right.
And we don't have the ordinances to stop it. So these types of things should be incorporated into our business district.
Right.
And as a let everybody know that we're not telling you how to design, but we're giving you design standards of what you need to meet. The second thing is the sidewalks and so on need to be cleaned up. They've always been, like you were talking about the storefronts, gum all over the place, everything. It's never been, and Lorraine, you hit it on the head about the walking in and it being something you want to walk into. So you got that one right. So we've talked about this before, and going in. And then the final thing is going through, is looking at our signage and our zoning and our lighting and so on. So making the lighting in the community, make it a little brighter, a little more inviting and so on, so at night, so people can stroll, can walk and do things. And then parking. This has come up back and forth. Adjacent to, there's lots of, or there's homes adjacent to the side streets. Now, if owners of the properties want to buy a house up or two houses up and have a parking lot, we have to look at that type of zoning that will allow that within so many feet of our business district. Because if they want to invest, we've turned restaurant owners down when they wanted to do that and so on. We've turned them down. But we might want to look at creating, being able to, in so many feet from the street, where they can take a house and put a parking lot in, or put parking, but if they have to buy, they have to do it of their own money. We're not going to do it for them. That's a question in there about going into penetrating a neighborhood, a residential neighborhood, and cars. I understand that. And then finally, Dorset Avenue has got to be included in this.
Oh, absolutely.
In there. And I think that's what we go on. But if you want, if members of the committee want to, we should have somebody from the board or a committee of our board working with you and the owners to get a partnership together.
I'm happy to do it. I've also got every Thursday here. Maybe once a month.
How do you feel about that, about a subcommittee?
Absolutely.
Well,
yes. Can only improve.
Does any members of our board want to be on a subcommittee to work with this?
Tim, quite a few years ago, Mary Syracuse, Mary Lou Ferry, and myself had a meeting with Teresa Kelly about lighting up all of Dorset Avenue, because it's our entrance into Ventnor, Margate, and just to get the whole street uniform,
right,
lighting wise. You could change all the buildings and everything. If you light everything up, everybody will walk.
Streetscape.
And the next time we do streetscape on Ventnor Avenue, which I heard that we're doing in a year or two, I think maybe some of the business owners should be involved.
Absolutely.
In the design. I'm not knocking up what happened up the street, but I think it could have been a little bit more homey, a little better, you know. I have unbelievable pictures of Bonita Springs, Florida, on Old 41, what they did for about a mile and a half. And I ride my bike there and just sit, and I'm amazed how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. You know, and we could do the same thing. But we don't have to do it everything at once. One thing at a time, one little thing to get the ball rolling. And I think lighting is a real, real key factor here.
One of the things we're doing that doesn't cost a lot of money is if we can get through the Atlantic City Electric, they can be a little prickly, but if we can get to, the banners on the boardwalk, the idea that each business district is kind of graphically color-coded, so that you know you're in the Dorset Avenue opening, and all the banners have a similar feel: welcome to the Dorset Avenue Gateway, welcome to North Beach, welcome to the Central Business District, welcome to the Margate, whatever.
Down Beach.
You're talking about creating neighborhoods.
Yeah, and this is something that we'll probably have this summer, if the Atlantic City Electric will allow it, would be color-coded banners in those areas. And that's an inexpensive way to sort of get started on this. But I agree, I think you have to start. But I think lighting is really important. It's always about expense.
Well,
and the curb appeal of the downtown. Right. I don't like how dark the city is at night in those areas, even with the new LED streetlights. It doesn't feel...
it's not sufficient.
No.
I agree. And just driving one block in Morgan for Castle City.
Yep.
It is so lit up,
yep,
that it's welcoming.
Yeah.
You know.
So
I don't know if this would help it, but I think part of an ordinance could encourage, I don't think you could tell every business that they needed to have an awning and a lit and lighting of some kind, but I think those sorts of street lights like you see in Margate with the big light and the flower baskets on them.
They have gorgeous flowers there.
Yeah, I was going to say the planners are what kills me, is they have, it's wintertime, he has, I walk my dog past, but the meat market, Agnes, that's my loop, I do that at least once a day.
And we can't get them a buy.
Between Newport and Portland. And they have these old decrepit, all the flowers are dead, they're piled up, and and there's no much greenery, they're all different, they don't match, and they look, the stains all wearing off, I think they look awful.
Yeah, so I'd like to pull them all out. And the business, at the VBA meeting last night, or Monday night, they that's one of the things they want to address. They want to start to purchase with the city similar planners for each.
Planners, that's like, I think that's one of the easier things to start.
That's a good place to start.
Add some greenery, it's a lot of pavement over there.
And they're not as big, right? They're not as big as those. Those are like giant, like...
Well, they're all different. Some of them, everybody, they're all different.
They look like 70s playgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I think I'd like to pull, just as a group, I get a little resistance from this, but I feel like we could turn Park Mobile into the entire city and get rid of all of the meters throughout the entire city and go strictly to Park Mobile.
What is Park Mobile?
Park Mobile, you see it as the sign, it's an app. If you're going to park at certain areas of the city, it's
like a meter, it's like a key.
It would eliminate all the meters. I think the meters are up.
I think so too. I would love to get rid of the meters.
And I mean, the only complaint we hear is that some people don't like to use the app. But I feel like that's kind of mute.
You're not going to have a choice in 5 years.
You're not going to have a choice in 5 years. Well, and we don't have to maintain the meters. We don't have to send a police officer with someone to go deposit all the coins. Right. And we actually make more money.
Now, a comment here. Tonight, we had basically operated as a zoning board. Right now, we're operating as a planning board.
Right.
And it feels good to operate as a planning board. And I think we have to take each meeting now and take time at each meeting to be a planning board and to talk about planning issues and things that are before us and how we should be doing that. So I think it's time, because we've been busy for the past 4 years with just hearing cases. We haven't done much planning.
Right.
So let's get back to planning, if you'd like, board members, and we'll reserve a time, at least a half hour, and we can do it before a meeting or we can do it after a meeting. And what is your preference? Would you like to do it before a meeting or after a meeting?
That's not a long meeting.
Yeah, if you have a long meeting.
Well, no, that's the problem. So usually what we've done in the past is when we've had major things going, we've had up to an hour set aside before a meeting. And we've either started instead of 6:30, we start either 5:30 or 6 o'clock. And we have gone through and put a dedicated time to just planning with no interruptions. And I would recommend before the meeting.
Well, people that work, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Well,
I would start to generate an agenda and maybe add once a month have a session.
Yeah, once a month, not twice, but once a month. But I think it would be better, we would be better served doing it before the meeting. So if we could start at 6 o'clock, if it's possible, and do our half hour, and then because at the end of the meeting, we're generally fried, We want to get out of here, and the discussions are not as good. So how do the members feel about that?
I think we should have it after the meeting, assuming that the meeting doesn't run late. To come early might be an inconvenience.
Well, most of our meetings are going to run late.
Well, the other thing is, a lot of times before the meeting, you got a lot of people mulling around, waiting for the meeting to start. You've got attorneys and planners.
Okay.
Difficult to not be distracted.
Presents a little bit of a noticing issue. I mean, the notice says start at 6:30. If we're all here talking
business,
here's
what we'll do.
Six,
is
that's a no-no.
We'll start it at the end of the meeting. At the end of the meeting, we'll do it, and then I'll have nails and hammers, and we'll nail everybody's shoe to the floor, and then we'll keep everybody here. How's that? But let's just try that for a half hour, one meeting a month, and then we'll see if, how we go. And, but I think we all enjoy talking about the planning aspect, and it's our job. So let's get it done.
I think it's a good idea, because if you do that and you pick one or two topics to
right.
talk about, don't let it...
No, we got to be disciplined to a topic.
One or two, and that's it.
And in some cases, what we'd like to do is put have people propose an agenda, a topic for the agenda. And so if in preparation for these meetings, if you have a topic, send it to Carmella. And we can, well, then we'll pick the topic, and then we'll do it at that time. Like, good suggestion.
I saw that she smiled when you said send it to Carmella.
Yeah.
She wants more stuff to do.
Well.
She's actually laughing now.
She's actually begging for more stuff. But if you'd like that, we'll just choose an agenda, and we'll do it that way. Commissioner, I have to applaud you for bringing this up. It was very timely and good. Now,
I gotta tell you, he's been working on some kind of business thing for at least 7 years that I can remember.
Now, we talked about a subcommittee that was to shoot you. Is there anybody on the board who would like to join a subcommittee to support this business program the commissioner's talking about?
And I think to be on the safe side...
Are we working with you?
If the commissioner's one, we should limit it to maybe two more.
Two more, yeah.
So
if you commission, since you're a member of this board,
right.
you can only appoint two people, because that three is a quorum.
Right. So
three max. I think we're safe with three total.
Three total.
Tim and two more, or Tim and one more, whatever. But
and one is an alternate.
You can think about it and email us.
If we can do it right now.
There's other people that aren't here that might want
to. That's true. So we'll bring it up at the next. We'll do it at the next meeting on our planning board session. We'll bring it up and we'll do it. How's that? And this was a good after session.
Yep.
And then the other thing is to think about, we did a meeting a while back about a listening session we did where we actually changed how we do these meetings. We came up with it. So the next meeting, I like to put on the agenda that it'll be at least a 15 or 20 minute session where the board talks and we listen. And you can talk about anything about how to improve what we do or in general, just how we can improve ourselves. And that would be the case. So there'll be a listening session at the next meeting, and speak. It's yours. I'll be quiet.
Speak your mind.
Well, that's a joke.
That's right. But that's the case. So that's on the agenda for next meeting.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
On this meeting, is everybody, can I have a motion for adjournment? Can I have a second for the adjournment?
Second.
All those in favor? We are adjourned.
Good meeting tonight.